Hey, you want that to go?
Our takeouts this morning involve Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, who joins us from Washington. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, good morning, John.
Also, Louise Story is here in the studio, our finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
Todd, let's begin with you. Yesterday, the president, in something of a surprise to certain environmentalists, announces that he's opened coastal areas to offshore gas and oil drilling. Here's the Interior Secretary, Ken Salazar, speaking about the president.
He stands strong in the proposition here that our national energy security is a priority. And as he's done in other kinds of issues, he doesn't govern by politics and by polls. He governs by what is right.
But in fact, there's a lot of politics to this decision, and that's why we've asked you, Todd, to help us out here. I don't know how many times on this program you have either reported that lawmakers have said or have actually played tape of lawmakers who said cap and trade, the climate bill that the president touted as one of the centerpieces of his administration, is dead. Is it possible that this whole offshore drilling announcement yesterday in front of a F-15 fighter jet that is going to use biofuels is a way of getting votes for a climate change bill that's going to be taken up later this year?
Well, it is possible that cap and trade, they're trying to shock it back into life. Although the interesting thing about that is while Republicans have been dying for more drilling offshore, you know, the refrain, drill, baby, drill, it's almost a cliche at this point. That's only the tip of the iceberg, because if they like more offshore drilling, and they will, they're going to hate cap and trade. They really, really do.
They meaning whom?
Meaning Republicans and a lot of moderates. It is not a popular policy. So the president looks like he's trying to get a moderate way to the table, or even a conservative way to the table for a lot of Republicans who do not like this approach to climate change legislation, by giving them something they like. But it's a small thing.
But
it really is.
But there are jobs associated with offshore drilling. There is a stimulus dimension to doing this exploration that's going to affect states, particularly down south, where the Republican needs some votes.
Well, that's true. And it's interesting what Ken Salazar, the Interior Secretary, said in that cut, John. He said, well, this shows the president doesn't govern by polls. Well, in fact, it kind of shows the opposite, because about 65% of the public say they want more offshore drilling. And many of them are in the southern states. A lot of them are going to be in Louisiana, in the southern oil states, where there are moderate and conservative Democrats who don't like the approach to cap and trade. So the president's showing a bit of a pattern here. He has shown a habit at the start of a big debate of giving something to Republicans that they think they're going to want. Like on the healthcare debate, he said, I'm willing to look at medical malpractice and have the states do more with that. It wasn't enough. He never got Republican support for the bill. But he has shown a pattern of coming to the table by giving something the other side wants, trying to be the man in the reasonable middle. I think he's repeating that pattern here.
Well, not only the middle, but also projecting himself as a kind of a security president. There was the fighter jet. There was all the Pentagon brass there at Andrews Air Force Base. This announcement, very, very interesting. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing.
And now let's go to Louise Story, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times, with her front page business story in today's paper. 2009, not a great year for most people in the United States. I think that's fair to say, right, Louise? People couldn't find a job. People had a hard time keeping and staying in their homes. Lots of companies had to cut workers and saw losses, went deeply into the red. Not so true for one particular slice of the population, right? I mean, you report today that 2009 was a record year for some of the top hedge fund managers. Raked in, get this, John, $25 billion for themselves, spread between these 25 people.
Well, there could be another recession at any time. They've got to worry about that stuff, you know.
Louise, who are these people?
These people are hedge fund managers, and hedge fund managers take huge cuts of the fees. And so when they generate big returns, they personally make this money. And when we talk about these figures, we're talking about payouts on the scale of $1.3 billion just for Eddie Lampert, for instance, himself, not for his whole firm, just for him. And you may have heard of him. He's the one who brought together Kmart and Sears in that merger that was controversial. He was a few years back kidnapped, actually, by someone who maybe wanted to get their hands on his riches. So that's Eddie Lampert. But, you know, $1.3 billion is chump change compared to what George Soros is estimated to have made. George Soros is estimated to have made $3.3 billion. And you may have heard
for his fund.
For himself.
Yeah.
So what this figure includes is the portion of the fees that his fund gets that he personally takes, and the increase in value of his own stake in the fund.
His own investments.
And that's what AR Magazine, which puts this out, estimates it based on. But you may have heard of George Soros because, you know,
sure.
he was the one who bet against the British pound in the 90s, big supporter of democratic causes. Now, the winner was David Tepper. He got $4 billion. That is a new record. What's notable is in 2007, the biggest record was $3.7 billion, which John Paulson made. You remember, he's the one who bet against the mortgage market. He went massively short.
Right.
And I remember wondering after 2007, you know, in 2008, no one made as much as that, even in hedge fund world.
Right.
I wondered if anyone would break that $3.7 billion figure again. But here we are, David Tepper breaking it.
$4 billion.
$4
billion. For one particular person.
And, you know, he broke it. This is interesting. David Tepper broke it because he decided to bet for the banks. So after the government bailout, he thought, the government's not going to let the banks collapse. I'm going to be positive on these banks.
And he went long on the banks.
He went long on the banks, and it really paid off. He was, you know, betting alongside the government.
Well, we've got Ken Feinberg debating executive pay in Washington. Is anybody looking to regulate the hedge fund market or what these people are taking home?
So there is not a specific regulation for just hedge fund pay, but a few of these hedge funds are so big that they are likely to be considered systemically important when we get these new systemically important companies. And so in that capacity, whoever oversees systemically important could go in and say, oh, this pay package looks risky or not. The other thing that's happening is that it's pretty widely accepted in Washington that there'll be some changing in the taxation rules of hedge funds that will make their payouts a little less profitable. Nonetheless, when I talked to headhunters yesterday, I said, you know, are these hedge fund managers feeling bad that they're making so much in this economy? They laughed and they said, no, this is just part of the deal. That's why you go into these places. Money is part of the game.
Louise Story, Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.